Are you insane like me?
All right, thank you for tuning in to Fantasy Insanity. I am your host, John Bosch. Tonight, I bring on someone that I am sure that all of you are well aware of if you are into the fantasy football. He writes at DLF. He is a commissioner extraordinaire. He's an eater of a few foods. he's now becoming even a regular host on the Bull Rush podcast. He's there almost all the time now. It's great. So, and of course, he commissions the league that he's come on to talk about today, the Scott Fishbowl League. So, without further ado, Scott, is there any other things you got your hands in that I missed there?
I'm sure I got my hands in plenty of things, but we can start with those. Those sound good.
All righty. So thanks for joining me tonight. I really appreciate it. I think it'll be an interesting discussion. So I start off everyone basically asking, you know, when did you start playing fantasy football?
Well, I'm one of the old dogs. I'm like Jody. Jody started 1 year before me. I started in 1992. My very first league was a dynasty league. And I still remember my first two picks. It was a touchdown only at that point. So I picked Steve Young number one, first round. Got Emmitt Smith in the second round. So that was pretty nice.
You started, you would definitely probably not want to stray too far from the dynasty if you start out with those two and get to keep them for the peaks of their career.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this upcoming season will be my 25th season playing fantasy football. I've been in the industry about 12 years, something like that.
It is definitely something that once they start, if they like it, they can't get enough of it from what I have seen. So you started out just right in the dynasty as well. That is Ryan told me the same thing. I'm just taken aback by that. I can't imagine going straight into dynasty. It just seems like it's so much more effort and work and thought. Have you ever played redraft since then, or did you know?
Oh yeah, stick with that. I played. Okay. Yeah, in fact, just 4 years ago, I was in. My wife's not here. 35 different leagues. I branch out into every possible type of leagues that I can, and I find that branching out into so many different kinds of leagues, it makes you want to like create something that incorporates little bits and pieces of all the leagues. I play redraft, I play best ball, I play dynasty. I've narrowed my league count down to about six or seven that I actually set lineups in, but yeah, I do try just about everything.
Yeah, the best ball I think is definitely going to continue to take off with the ease of in-season running. My fantasy league has hit a home run with that. They're gonna do real well with that, having the best ball league where you get the fun of the draft and then you just kind of play it from there and you don't have to do anything. So
I really enjoy that as well.
I think more people are going to start getting more and more into that. So. Now you commission several leagues. Do you play in leagues that you don't commission?
Wow. I used to. I think I play in one that I don't commission at this point. It's really weird commissioning. I know, I'm sure you love it. You seem to love it. Ryan McDowell loves it. Lots of people love it. I'm a guy that loves it, but I'm always taken aback when I see on Twitter someone say, I want to start this league, but I'm not going to commish. I don't get that at all. It makes no sense. I would prefer to be the commish of all my leagues. That's one of the things I find most fun about playing fantasy football is commissioning the league.
Yeah. If you love it, you're going to love doing it. And if you don't, you are not the person cut out to be the commission or not. It takes work. You have to put in effort to it. So, I mean, it really is. It's fun. And I mix. I play somewhere I'm not the commissioner of, and I enjoy them. And every single one of them, I think, oh man, I hope everything's going right. But the ones I play in, they have strong commissioners. I've not.
That's good.
I'm pretty sure if I got into a league that didn't have a strong commissioner, it would not last long. I don't know. So that's a common trend I'm finding from everybody, that if they are a commissioner of one, they prefer to be a commissioner of everything. If you're going to create a league, how could you create a league and not be the one that wants to make sure it runs and goes the way you want it to go?
Exactly.
I mean, it's great to have ideas, and, you know, maybe you can compile those ideas with other people and get somebody that wants to give that time commitment to it, I guess. Speaking of time commitment, you play in that many leagues. I'm curious, how much time does that take out of your day?
Well, when I played in 35 leagues, like I said, I'm only in six or seven now that I set lineups. But when I played in 35 leagues, I don't know, your listeners may or may not know this, but I'm a web developer on the side. I'm a senior developer, web developer at DLF. I created a tool that allows me to set all of my leagues lineups on one page. All 35 leagues in under 5 minutes. However, waivers is another story. Going through each league to see if someone's on available, that got rough. So I kind of missed the boat on some waivers in some leagues back then, but it's not too bad when it's only six or seven leagues. I feel like I spend, you know, 15, 20, 25 minutes every other day or so.
Yeah, that's not terrible. I can't imagine 35 leagues. You spent enough time to go ahead and develop a tool to allow yourself to spend less time.
Yeah.
That's impressive in and of itself that you created that tool. Is that a tool that you've made public to people?
I have. There's probably, I think last year there were about 150 different people that used it.
Wow.
To keep track of their leagues. Cause even for best ball and MFL 10s, all you have to do is keep putting your league IDs in there. And if you log in, you can see the standings of every league you're in on one page, or the live scoring of every league you're in on one page. So if you want a quick, easy way to just click and I want to see how I'm doing in all my leagues, it's all on one page. Just keep scrolling. So people have enjoyed that. Now that I'm down to six or seven leagues, I don't quite use it as much, but a lot of people do.
Does it pull from multiple sites or just from MFL?
Just from MFL.
Okay.
It would be nice if it pulled from multiple sites. I probably could put in the time to do that, but I just I don't play anywhere else, so I haven't felt the need to do that. I've had no complaints about that either yet.
Let me know when you put that in. I would love to see a custom scoreboard where I can literally just have one screen and I can see all my scores on all these different sites, you know, all at once.
Yeah.
And not have to switch tabs. So when you want to dedicate that amount of time to something that'll pay nothing, you know, enjoy.
Yeah. But,
so you started out straight in Dynasty. You moved a little further than I'm assuming that your original one was not a Devi league. As you are
no.
kind of one of the people that started that. So
right.
how did you transition? What made you want to go from, you know, Dynasty League to Devi? And what is Devi League, if you want to explain that?
Well, yeah, I was probably playing Dynasty for about 7 years before a friend of mine mentioned that, hey, I want these college players. Why can't we draft these college players in our rookie drafts? His name's Corey Brender. I might as well put it out there in case he listens and he wants credit. But
I have one more. Yes.
Yes. One more listener. That's how I feel on the Bull Rush every week. I just want us to have a couple listeners, more every week. But developmental leagues are leagues where you draft college players. They stay in a farm system until they're in the pros, and then they automatically move up to your big club. You don't have to wait till the NFL draft to draft them. You can draft them I drafted Adrian Peterson when he was a senior in high school. Whoa. So we found it to be a new fun way for degenerates like us to do something unique.
Yeah, I approached that subject. I talked with Ryan about it on it. Something my brother and I have kicked around in a different league. We just said, you know, we want to figure out a way to make us watch more college football, because we'll watch a little bit, but we don't watch it like we watch the NFL. And that was before I knew what a Devi league was or what a Devi player was. It's something I think I'm definitely going to address in the future to see if people want to, you know, squeeze this in a little bit, even if it's just a couple of guys, just something to make it a little bit more interesting.
I think that league that I'm creating right now is a great way for people to tiptoe into it. For your listeners, I'm creating a league where you don't have to draft Devi players if you don't want to. There's a Devi draft, but you don't have to. You don't have to do it if you don't want to. You can save your auction dollars for the rookie draft. So if you just want to dip your toes in it, I think something like that is really nice, where you don't force people to actually do the Devi part. It's an optional kind of thing.
Oh yeah, I think it would have to be optional. The only problem is, I think if you don't take that option, I'm very curious, what does the rookie draft look like in a Devi league where, you know, like you said, you took Adrian Peterson in his senior year of high school. He sat there and just never moved.
Yep. Sat there. On one of my teams, he's still there. I mean, it's been what, 10 plus years he's been sitting on my roster since that draft pick. It depends on how deep, how many players deep the Devi draft is, because every year you will get a guy, you will get guys like Kevin White, or I hate to say this, but like Cordarrelle Patterson, or like
he was a thing, people. He
yeah,
was. He
yes. Was a thing. Or Cam Newton, or guys that really bust out their final year of college, and those guys tend to slip through the cracks and end up available in your rookie drafts. But Ryan's leagues, you only draft, I believe, 36 Devi players, which isn't a lot. My leagues, you draft, I mean, every team has 20 plus on them. So at that point, yeah, the rookie drafts are kind of crappy.
At that point, you just kind of move it, though, to make it the Devi league. The Devi draft becomes the kind of most exciting thing, I'm guessing, in that offseason. So.
And the first round of the rookie draft for those guys that, you know, slipped through the cracks. That 101 becomes huge in rookie drafts for that reason.
In your Devi leagues, how many rookie rounds do you typically do then when you have a Devi league? I mean, is there a point to going past two rounds?
Honestly, not really. But we do still go four rounds, because our rosters carry 40 players in season. And this is just QB, running back, wide receiver, tight end. Just the four positions. We carry 40 plus unlimited taxi for rookies, unlimited taxi for Devies, and three IR spots. So most teams have 50 plus players of just the four positions. So we do take those late round shots. They generally get dropped. But yeah, I feel that way. The third, fourth round, it seems like there's no point. We're drafting guys that don't make teams.
I assume that your taxi squads are ones that you have to have drafted them, right? Like, you can't just randomly pick up.
Correct. Somebody. Yep.
Okay. So, okay.
Yep. You have to have drafted them, and they come off after they're no longer rookies. So, but it's 1 year for them to develop, you know?
Okay. So you started playing, you played your dynasty, and then you've gone to this next level of the Devi leagues, which they terrify me and sound intriguing at the same time. We'll see. I'm sure I'm going to like them. I'm sure it's going to be another reason for me to just be more addicted, unfortunately. Or fortunately.
I think with the amount of information that's out there now, especially on sites like DLF, Dynasty League Football, you could go by the rankings and do a little bit of research or read an article here or there and do relatively well in Devi. Whereas, obviously, when I started playing in like 99, there was nothing. even in like 2007, there was virtually nothing. So nowadays, it's probably a lot easier to dip your toes in to give it a try than it used to be.
Yeah, how in the world did you find out Adrian Peterson? Were you subscribing to like the college recruiting letters? I mean, literally, like, how did you find out Adrian Peterson?
No, there were sites that that talked about recruiting classes and stuff like that at that time. I think like Rivals and Scout came along in like 2002, 2003, somewhere in there. So after they came along, and they were an online site with scouting rankings and stuff, it was a lot easier. And now it's ridiculously easy. But it was mostly just watching college football and knowing what was going on in the college football landscape at that time.
I'm just going to listen to the Bull Rush podcast when they talk Devi players and just write down every name, and that's who I'm submitting. So nice. Beware. I expect that episode to be very in-depth, you know. So once you've played the Devi League, then you went a step. You've gone even further than that. You created the Scott Fishbowl, which is a great name. I You know, I'm a little scared to think what it would be named if your last name wasn't Fish. You know, toilet, right. Dogs, salad, God forbid. You know, I'm curious, what made you want to go and create this humongous league?
Well, there's the backstory is I created what it is today, but I used to run a site called FF Oasis, and one of my writers, one of my editors, wanted to created a league, a larger league, that would be akin to your like 60 team leagues that are all over everywhere. And he did that, and he invited some other friends in the industry, and it was, you know, probably like 30 analysts, 30 fans, something like that. It was set up differently, but he did that, and we called it the FF Oasis Invitational. And he left. He's a lawyer. He went to work on, you know, being a lawyer. And I took up that league, and I changed it up to the way I wanted it. You know, I changed it into the beast it is now. So I'm a credit where credit is due guy. I did not make that very first league that now morphed into this. But once I took it over, I turned it into what it is now. So, what it is now, maybe I should probably go into that. It's,
that was my next thing that I was, you know, I have my little notes saying, you know, the the basic setup of this monster. It, for those that don't know, you're going to be shocked at the amount of teams that you're about to hear that are in it. It's like he said, a little 60 team league was nothing. So if you want to go in, what is the setup of the Scott Fish Bowl?
Okay. Yeah. And here's the weird thing about the name. I generally just cut, it feels arrogant to say Scott Fish Bowl. I don't know why, just something about it. Just, I have trouble with, so I generally call it SFB. But I've
noticed that you call it that. That's why I definitely wanted to call it Scott Fishbowl. Nice. Really, try and make you feel a little uncomfortable.
Nice.
I don't know you. I probably shouldn't, but I figured you'd be up for that little bit of a dig. And knowing that you hate salad, so I think that the Scott Salad Bowl would be even more terrifying and entertaining. Oh. But no, it's a good name. You deserve the credit for it. So.
Well, yeah, it's it does make me a little whatever, but I can handle it.
I'll call it SFB for the rest of the podcast now.
So this league is 480 teams. It's 360 analysts, and we bring in 120 fans because we find that people really, really want to play with all these analysts. So kind of it was when I took it over, I built it to be like a community to get together. Like I want the big boys to play with the smaller sites or the people just trying to break into the business and to be able to communicate with each other and get to know each other. Maybe they'll see a small guy doing really good and they'll, you know, reach out to them. And some of that seems to have happened. But it's 480 teams, 360 analysts. You pretty much can name any site. And we have people playing from Football Guys to Scout to ESPN to NFL.com, Yahoo, 444, DLF. I mean, you name a site and we have people playing. Pro Football Focus, we have people playing in this. And not just some. I think RotoViz has 20 plus people. Couple Roto World's got 4, 5, 6, 7 people playing. CBS has, I think CBS only has one guy playing right now. But they're all jumping in, and you get to play against some of the analysts that you read. It's quite a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I think, I'm guessing with 120 spots open to the, you know, the non-industry folks, I'm guessing it's extremely competitive to get into. I've pushed multiple times. I'm doing my best to try and work my way in there, you know, being as creative as possibly trying to catch the eye of whoever chooses these people to get into it. So That is actually my next question. Is that, and I'm gonna get my, I don't have a pen. I should have gotten a pen. But
notes how to get in.
Notes. How do you get in? How do you go about applying to get in if you're not an industry insider that's already been invited into it?
Well, the first thing to do is sign up at scottfishbowl.com. There's a nice little sign up form. You first sign up, and then basically you just have to reply to me. Honestly, it's quite, I don't know. It's kind of weird how, for example, this year we have, I believe it's about 1200 people, fans signed up for 120 spots. So what, 1 in 10 will get in. But oddly enough, I will send out the first email saying, hey, do you still want in this league? I send that out end of April, early May. Hey, do you still want in this league? And for some reason, probably 30-40% do not reply to that email. So immediately the field is just cut right down right there, because I know it may have hit your spam folder, but I can't do anything about that. If you don't respond to me, I can't do anything about that. So keep checking your spam folder about that time. But
if anybody's listening that is trying to get in, you can just let it go to spam. Just let it go to spam. Hit delete, block Scott. There's 1,200 people. You know, just block him. You don't need, he doesn't need your reply. I'm sure he'll remember you. No, I'm kidding. You should definitely keep up for it. People don't read emails. I don't know why. People just ignore them. But, you know, that is a great way. And I'm sure you can, how do you continue to whittle it down then?
I send that first email. And then about 3 weeks later, I send another email. And once again, for some reason, that it's less of a cutoff, but another like 10% don't respond to that second email. And you will get fans that'll say, you know, they got, oh, I have a vacation that week or whatever. I got to make sure that they're going to be around, because when these drafts go on, you have 480. If you're active on Twitter, you'll notice you have 400. We are the number one trending topic in a few states during the first day of SFB. People get really antsy if you're not around to make your picks that first week. They get, some of them get downright angry. I got to make sure that you're going to be active. You're going to be there. So I do a second email, and then from that point on, I go on different things. I take a look at like when you first signed up. I take a look at your comments when you sign up. There's just so many things that I take a look at that gives you a little bit of weight. Like if you've participated in my Toys for Tots drive, which I do every year. I know it shouldn't, but I let that play a little bit of a factor, and I let people know that plays a factor. And lost my train of thought. But
you definitely should let that play a factor. Mm-hmm. That's, people are getting into something. They should, you know, there should be a little bit of a way to earn a little extra credit and get a little sway.
Right.
It's no guarantee, but
right, exactly.
Put that out there, improves the world. So why not?
Yeah, I'm very, very passionate about the Toys for Tots thing. So if you're the type of person that helps me out with the things I run to try to get money for Toys for Tots, then it does bump you up the list. It just does. And then I believe it or not, I run a lottery. It's a basic lottery after I've gone through my checklists to make sure you're an active owner, make sure you're replying to me and you seem interested. Then it's just a lottery. That's the worst part about it. The worst part about it is that it is a lottery at that point. And sending out that email, it's such a bad day for me, because I send out this giant email to fans saying, hey, here's your official invitation. Reply to me and you're in. And I also send out an email because I think it's fair to do. Hey, I'm sorry, you're on the wait list. And it's gut-wrenching sending that second email on that morning. Oh,
I'm sure. But hey, at least you get back to him. I'm sure there's a lot of people that don't even expect to be heard, you know, and they just think, oh, he never even got my invitation. You know, the fact that you respond and say, no, you're not in right now, that'll keep people interested still, and they'll keep applying for the future. It's something that's never going to go away, and you assure that, and that's fantastic.
I would like to think that it does have that effect. And I think part of it, I feel like that's communication is one of the biggest keys to being a good commish. And I feel like even if they're not in my league, I want to maintain that level of good communication.
Yeah, you don't want to be known as a bad commissioner, and you always want to set the example of the communication. The communication and the activity in fantasy football is vital for any league to be successful. You actually have, you test the activity level before somebody can even get in, which is fantastic. And then you have activity rules in your league, correct?
Yep, I do. Generally, all my leagues have activity rules, but yeah, you have to log in at least one. I believe SFB is once every 10 days, because I realize that sometimes people, it's meant to be a minimal effort league, because a lot of us analysts have stuff, weekly articles we're writing, so I try to make it as minimal effort as possible. The rosters are big so that there's less waiver wire free agency. You still have to set lineups, but they do roll over week to week. So you can just, if you want to set your lineup a week advance and be away from the site for 8-9 days, I'm okay with it. At the 10-day marker, I always email. I email anybody that goes over the 10-day marker and just say, hey, it's been 10 days. You either want to log in and check it out or whatever, So, but yeah, my other leagues have more stringent activity rules, but SFB, I'm a little more easygoing on it, because I know that it's supposed to be minimal effort and we got a lot of stuff going on.
So once somebody does manage to weasel their way in somehow, how do they go about, what's the draft setup? You said it is a long running, but obviously it's a long running with the intent of, hey, make your pick.
Exactly.
How many rounds is it? What exactly do you draft? What's your lineup makeup in this league?
Okay. And this is what has drawn a lot of interest the last 2 years, is the way I've set up the roster and the starting lineup construction and the scoring to kind of even out the playing field for different positions. And you'll see it in each individual draft. There's this year, there's going to be 40 different 12 team drafts. So you'll see each draft is just really, really different because of that, because tight ends are premium. They get extra points for receptions, and running backs get points per carry, which boosts them. And it's a super flex, so quarterbacks are a little more valuable, and wide receivers, we all know, are already really valuable. So they're pretty similarly scored to normal. But I go with, it's QB, two running backs, three wide receivers, one tight end. And then I believe it's four flexes, but one can be a quarterback. So four flexes, one can be a quarterback. So basically you can start up to seven wide receivers. You can start up to six running backs or five tight ends. You can construct your roster however you want after that initial, seven players or six players.
So, I mean, this is a minimal level effort league, like you said. It's not something where you're having to pour over. There's no reason to pour over the waiver wire. If there's, these rosters are going to be large rosters and you're starting a lot of players, you have lots of options. I'm very curious to follow. I wasn't around on Twitter last year when the draft would have been going on, but I'm looking forward to following it if I'm not participating, just to see. I'm curious on how the draft goes for a league like this. Have you seen anybody go just completely off the wall crazy and do something you never would have expected?
Oh, I don't pay enough attention to each individual drafter to really, really notice it. Afterwards, you'll see articles or you'll see people tweeting about, this guy took three quarterbacks in the first six rounds, or this person, they didn't draft a tight end until the 10th round, stuff like that. You'll see those later, but I don't notice it as it's going, because I hate to say this, but I am more worried about the activity level as it's going, because every year, and I cannot understand for the life of me how this happens. Every year we have a couple people that bail. And granted, when you have 360 or last year or 480 teams this year, you're not going to get 480 perfect applicants for perfect owners. You're going to have a few that are going to be a little more flaky, but I do not understand how someone can go through the process to getting into this league and then just be like, eh, whatever. I'm going to let my clock expire, you know?
That is crazy. What do you set the clock at?
I have the clock set at 8 hours and I shut it off in the middle of the night for 6 hours. I believe it's 6 or 7 hours. So that, you know, people don't get killed overnight.
I can't imagine if your pick is on the clock for more than an hour. I'm guessing that when you check your timeline, you are just being lit up saying, hey, it's your pick, it's your pick, it's your pick, it's your pick. It's got to be Humongous.
It is. And it's probably one of my least favorite things about the draft is people hounding other people. It's one thing if the person has gone onto the league site, you've seen them on the league site and they didn't pick, or you see them tweeting and they're not making their pick. But if it's a person who's got this thing starts at 10 a.m. on July 11th, there are people who are at work, right? People have jobs, people have lives. I have no problem with someone taking their 8 hours, but I do have a little bit of a problem with them taking their 8 hours, more than a few times, repeatedly. And I do have a problem if they are, you know, clearly around and not picking, but I have no problem. If you need 8 hours, that's what it's there for. You know, if you're going to a movie and then you have to pick up with your wife or something, then you go pick up your kid from daycare and you're making dinner and stuff and you can't get your pick in for 5, 6. I get that. We all have lives, but it's the other one that bothers me. It's the fact that people don't take that into consideration and they just hammer someone's timeline with get in there and pick, like the, just assuming people should be picking immediately.
Yeah, I will say I did one of my first dynasty startups just recently, and I have a job where I was talking to a patient for an extended period of time, and I was on the clock, and all of a sudden I started getting memes and memes and gifs, and it was entertaining. I think they were hopefully good natured. I don't know, maybe they were just being really mean, but I took it as good natured ribbing, and they were entertaining at least when I got back there. Being able to be outside the real world and into the fantasy world, it made for some entertainment. So once the draft has taken place, you know, you do have your activity rules. Waiver wires probably aren't very, there's probably not much waiver activity, and you actually have no trading, I noticed, in this league.
Mm-mm. So yeah, it's part of the minimal effort thing. And also, if there was trading, I would have to keep, because we have so many prizes donated from so many sponsors, and we used to have cash prizes. We didn't last year. I don't know if we'll bring it back this year, but we have tons of other prizes from so many places that I worry that there might end up being some kind of collusion here or there. A lot of the big places that run championship type stuff, they don't allow trading either. Some do, some don't. But I decided, in the spirit of minimal effort, because there's so many analysts, let's just nix trading. Let's just take it off the table. Waivers, generally, people you'll see a lot, they will drop their entire $100 like week one, because the waivers are so thin. I'm not sure if I mentioned this, but it's 22 player rosters and you don't have defense or kickers. So that means what, 240 players are rostered per division. That takes quite a bite out of those four positions.
Yeah. You're definitely not going to find I'm thinking back to last year. I'm wondering if like Thomas Rawls was even available the week that everybody wanted Thomas Rawls, you know?
Yeah.
Somebody blew the whole budget.
Yeah. I know people blew their budgets for James Jones and Deion Lewis after week one. You'd see those guys go for 100 routinely in the SFB leagues on week one last year.
Yeah, you pretty much have to. You're not gonna find anything else better. So you might as well go for that one player that maybe will make a little bit of a difference. So you've also with this being a humongous league, there has to be a way to win it. So the playoffs become the playoffs become very unique. I'm assuming that that was not an easy challenge to figure out. He's shaking his head. No, no, no. So how did you come about your playoff format?
You know, the playoffs have changed every year until the last two. And I think I've finally got it narrowed down to a way I like it and a way I feel is somewhat fair. But I did tweak. I made the tiniest tweak last year and I might tweak it a little more this year. Basically, each conference has 60 teams. It's five divisions of 12-man leagues per conference. And what I've decided to do is put 30 of the 60, so like six players in a 12-team league, so 30 of the 60 in a conference into the playoffs. And each week, half the field gets cut. Instead of having a bunch of head-to-head matchups, I wanted to take that bad week luck out of it. Like if a top team has a bad week, but they're still in the top half, they'll move on, you know, whereas in a head-to-head, they'll probably lose and be out. So I advance the top half or so every week up until the final, and then the final is 10 teams.
Okay, and then it's just obviously in the final, the teams that scores the most of that 10 teams wins it all then, right?
Yep. And I do have another wrinkle. In week 13, the very first week, the wild card round, I carry over your season average for points. Yet another way to try to eliminate those bad beats. So they get their season average plus whatever they score in week 13. And then, yeah, of course, the top half advance.
That is a nice way to reward a little bit of consistency throughout the regular season as well. I do like that. That's very nice. So, you know, when people have won this, it obviously you're not winning like, you know, some huge jackpot, but I'm guessing winning this kind of a thing, you know, what kind of a reaction does it usually get?
elation maybe. I have talked to the people who have won afterwards, obviously, and they're completely stoked. And I think they really enjoy getting the congratulations from, you know, a bunch of different people on Twitter about it. I'd say that, you know, even a couple of years ago, but I think it definitely does still hold true. A lot of people look at this as bragging rights more than any prize that can be offered. We have some great prizes. We have a $300 scout league, you know, where it's a free entry into the, you know, fantasy football world championships basically. And we have lifetime subscriptions to Dynasty League football and football guys. We have 3-year subscriptions to football guys, 1-year subscriptions to tons of stuff. We have so many things that we give away. Thankful to those amazing sponsoring sites. But I would say it's mostly about bragging rights. And those people that win, whew, man, they still talk about it for years. In fact, several of them still have it in their Twitter bio that they won SFB.
Oh yeah, it should be. It should be the very first line, shouldn't it?
Yeah. In one of the first years of SFB, I led the league wire to wire. It was very annoying. And in the final week, I'm sure you know Mike Clay of ESPN, right?
Yep.
He beat me out in the final week. And I don't think I'll ever get over that. I think it's mostly because I led the entire league from wire to wire and then lost it to him. But if I'm going to lose to someone, it might as well be Mike Clay.
The irritation that is on Scott's face right now is priceless. Just the fact that this still eats at him. This is fantasy football. That's what it does to you. Instantly, that memory, I could see that memory hit him, and his face just went to just, oh, it still eats at him. So
it does. Now that it's this big, you know, and you know. Now that it's this big, my chances of winning this thing are just almost nothing now. Yeah, I'd like to say they're one in 480, but I don't know.
I think we can give you a little bit better of a chance. Let's go one in four. There's got to be somebody else. You said there's some inactive owners that you have to get rid of. So, you know, maybe one in 470 or so, you know.
Oh, there we go. I'm on my way.
So what do you do with those inactive owners throughout the season? If somebody, you know, you said you email them, you know, after the 10-day mark, and some people might have to drop out for a valid reason. You know, they moved, they got a job change, you know, something drastic happened. They just have to move on. What do you do at that point?
Honestly, I've only had one person drop out, give me a reason and drop out. The rest I've had to kick, and I've, I don't know that I would do this in my home league, but I kick out at least five people a year. Because that first week, I will email you after what, 10 days. After 14 days, I'll pop another email at you. I'll be like, you still haven't logged in. You still haven't set your lineup. And if I have to set your lineup 2 weeks in a row, because I don't want that team to get a zero if I'm going to replace it, and I don't want an unfair competitive advantage in the league. So if I have to set your lineup in 2 weeks in a row, I don't care what your excuse is. You're gone. I have quite literally hundreds. This year, maybe over 1,000 people that want to get in. No, this year, we're definitely over 1,000 people that are not going to get in. And you're not going to set your lineup for 2 weeks. I don't know. It just feels a little disrespectful to those people that couldn't make it and are just clawing to get in.
Yeah, it's completely disrespectful. And you were extremely patient in giving them even 2 weeks. Honestly, I think running something like this, like with people you don't personally know, 1 week, I mean, if they're just not going to act, if they're not going to participate, I can't imagine you. I can't believe that you go to the level of you personally setting the lineup for them. That's irritating to me as somebody that's not even doing it. I can't believe that anybody puts you in that position to do it. That's just, they shouldn't expect to be in the league any longer.
Yeah, it happens way more frequently than I'd like to admit. The problem is, you know, having been in the fantasy industry for, you know, 12, 13 years, I'd say 80% of the writers that are in this league, I do know personally. So,
oh, that's true.
That's what makes it even tougher to try to kick out one of them. But I will say this. Usually the people that do get that inactive are the really small blog guys or fans. It's rarely the, you know, the RotoViz guy, you know? So it is a little bit easier on me to get rid of someone that I barely know. You're right.
Somebody that's making their livelihood on this, or at least, you know, is into it enough that they're a name that's known, they don't want to be known as somebody that would be kicked out of the Scott Fishbowl. That's a black mark on them. I can't imagine that would go over well for them. So, you know,
I got to tell you a story about a guy last year that I kicked out.
We're not finished just yet.